This podcast is part of the Gunna Geek Network. The opinions expressed may not represent other podcasts or affiliates of Gunna Geek. Check out more podcasts at GunnaGeek.com and get ready because geekiness starts in 3, 2, 1.
Critics say we should be watching these movies.
But we're here to see if they're right.
Join us as we take a cinematic journey through independent and classic film.
So dim the lights.
And get ready for the show.
This is Art House Legends Podcast, where high art and geek culture collide. Welcome to the podcast that's about to explode. This is the Movie Dude Eric, and yes, I do run this gang of pill-popping crazies, and along with me are...
Oh, this is Kent, and I don't want to worry anyone, but isn't that your motorcycle down there?
Hey, this is Chris, and amoebas don't make motorcycles and atomic bombs.
At least not in this timeline. But this episode, we're discussing Akira, with the voices of Mitsuo Iwata, Nozomu Sasaki, Mami Koyama, Tetsuo Genda, Hiroshi Itake, and directed by Katsuhiro Otomo. Gentlemen, we're back to anime, and this is actually a pretty important one because before this one, anime wasn't really a thing in the United States. You know, in fact, I want to say that anime outside of Japan really didn't take off until this one hit the world, did it?
You had serialized cartoon anime, but not really feature anime. I mean, you could point and go, hey, look, Robotech's on TV, and it's inspiring other things. But really, even outside of robot combat, nothing really. So,
but yeah. I mean, what I mean is, it didn't hit mainstream success.
Right.
Robotech didn't even really hit the market.
Yeah,
and I would say that whatever markets it did hit was practically because of how cheap it was put out there.
Yeah, slice up three different animes and come up with one. Yeah, okay, but yeah,
so. But another thing that's interesting about this particular film is that this is based on a very popular Japanese manga. And we haven't really dealt with manga before in Art House Legends. How familiar are you with manga and with Akira, if you've ever read it before?
I have the first volume sitting next to me, and I've never read it. I mean, I got it like last year, but... It's massive, and it's just the first volume, you know. So like, I don't know. It's
I hard think to find that time from what I understand, there's what I understand there's 2,000 pages of Akira to all totaled together. So that is a lot of story to tell.
Yeah.
But what about you, Kent? How familiar are with manga?
Well, I worked in a comic book shop ordering comics for like 4 years, 5 years.
Nice.
So, but there's always it was always kind of weird though because you had to predict in advance what was going to be popular 2 or 3 months down the line and what you wanted to keep in stock. But there was always a copy of this in stock in the manga version because it was one of the classics. You just keep it around. So I don't know if we had like volume 1, volume 2, or if we just carried the complete in one, oh my god, what? How do you even hold this volume? There might have been a slipcase edition. That might be what we had. So
a cinder block of Akira, basically.
Yeah.
I think every comic book shop has at least one thing of Akira somewhere, even if it's just a few extra graphic novel tie-ins and stuff. And it may be a figure of a certain character or a certain motorcycle, which we'll be talking about in just a little bit. I'll just out and say it. I love that motorcycle. Holy crap, that motorcycle.
If you want to talk about iconic vehicles, that motorcycle eventually comes into play. It's like, well, iconic vehicles in movies where you got the Back to the Future car, you got Mad Max's. The motorcycle. So, Canada's motorcycle.
Well, I mean, it just looks like a really sweet piece of machinery. You know, it's it has that kind of sleek look. It's got the red, it's got the candy, you know, a weird assortment of product placement.
Yeah.
On it. Let's see here. It has Citizen watches, BMW, the United States Air Force, Canon cameras, and like, is this product placement here, or is this like?
Let's face it. If this was a real person today, there would be a Monster emblem somewhere on that, or Red Bull, one of the two products. There would be. What's weird is when you say there's Citizen, I didn't make the connection that there were Citizen watches, because in some versions of that, of some of the artwork I've seen in the past, they would play Citizen with Immigrant. And I've always thought that maybe that's what some inside joke, but like, now that you mention watches, like, wait, what the hell? And now I'm trying to figure out why would he have Citizen watches on?
Because Rolex wouldn't give him enough money.
Yeah. So,
but you said that there would be like a Monster decal.
Yeah.
I don't see Kaneda being a dude bro. I really don't. You know.
He's a punk. So he drinks Red Bull instead. Okay. We're gonna get more hatred for this 2 minutes.
All right. But okay. So let's talk about the setting here, because I'm gonna say this right now. I love the opening of this movie. Say what I will about what else I think about this movie, and this is a movie that I've probably seen like 7 or 8 times, and it is most of the times that I've seen it, it wasn't intentional. I didn't plan to see it again. It just showed up, and I just find myself watching it. And I'm not going to say whether I'm a fan of the movie or not, but I will say though that iconic opening film of a film, Akira has it from the prologue about Tokyo 1988 with the silent bomb that goes off, to the establishing shots of Neo Tokyo. To me, it was reminiscent of Blade Runner and the opening, and how we saw Los Angeles was it 2017, if I'm not correct?
I think it's this year.
Blade Runner?
It's either this year or next year.
Where's my flying cars, damn it? But no, But you know, just the way that it sets up the environment, it shows off in these sweeping shots, the skyscrapers and the landscapes. This is a gorgeous view of a city, especially considering the prologue and what we've seen, what happened to this, and to see kind of what has come from the ashes. So, what do you think about this setting? Did you have the same kind of awe in regards to the opening, or did you have any impressions about the setting that we have here?
I thought the buildings were very Blade Runner-esque. Just building with building, and from their ground level, you can't even see the horizon because of the buildings in the way. Way massive population there.
I don't know. With Blade Runner, it was more industrial.
Right.
Whereas here, it's more tech. It's more techno. It's more cyberpunk.
I think some of that's the 80s feel of some of it.
Well, that, both of these came out in the 80s.
Right, but this felt more like... This felt more the 80s than Blade Runner did. Blade Runner was the 80s trying to project into the future. This is the 80s keeping the 80s, but telling a story that... Well, could have been still like 5 years later if we didn't just see the city nuked. But
mm-hmm. What do you think, Chris?
I mean, I definitely got the Blade Runner feel. I was mostly just taken aback by I was sucked into the backgrounds of like every, especially in the opening, like with the biker gang stuff. Just like all the backgrounds, it's like I could just, I don't know, I was sucked into it. It was crazy. Detail in the movie.
One of the things I love, especially when it shows off the backgrounds, is how it moves the camera. So everything kind of moves in frame. It gives you that kind of sense of you know, the sweeping epic look at the city. So it's not just still shots, you know, that there's fluid movements, and especially considering that the biker gangs and the motorcycle, you know, the speed that the film definitely puts out there practically from the beginning of the film. It works especially in establishing Neo Tokyo, because not only are you watching this high, you know, this fast pitched action sequence on motorcycles, but you're also getting a look of the city from both kind of looking in the background of what's happening around the motorcycles, as well as they do these kind of long shots, these very wide shots, where the motorcycles are these like little blips, and yet you're seeing the city in the background. One that struck me was when they're going across the bridge, and you can see the reflections off the water of the skyscrapers, and that was just the amount of detail and the visual look of the city just really plays up, especially considering that as we're having this motorcycle battle, we're also getting the story. As well with the guy that's trying to elude the cops with one of the espers, or what looks like a child,
yeah,
from the beginning. Mm-hmm. And I really like how they kind of played that visual look of this guy with this young or this smaller individual, and you're thinking that, you know, that this is someone that's trying to protect a child from someone or something, and is running away from something. And they do a really good job of setting that into motion, where you're asking the right questions, right? Or did you find that to be confusing in juxtaposition with the motorcycle sequence?
Yeah, it wasn't that confusing. I mean, it's obvious this is a plot line. They will meet. Hey, this is something. Except mm-hmm. I was going to mention about the difference between background, also some of the foreground detail when they go into the bar. I think it's the bar. And there's just trash everywhere, and there's such detail on the trash and the garbage and the rundownness of it. It's like, yeah.
It's not even just that. I mean, with the protests and the riots, yeah, that we see out on the streets, mm-hmm. there's a lot of a lot of that has to be with the hand-drawn nature of the animation here, right? Because all of this is having to be drawn out. This isn't something like with film where, you know, a detail might be missing because someone didn't put this particular piece of prop in frame, or, you know, or something that wasn't supposed to be there found its way there. Everything was meticulously put into each frame of this particular film, so this adds that kind of level of detail, especially in a movie that detail is the most crucial part of this, because this is a very thick story, right? This is, to try to explain Akira as a story would probably take as long as the movie itself to explain, right? Because we're talking about yeah. We're talking about psychics, we're talking about political movements, we're talking about prophecies, we're talking about genetics. This thing is all over the place. This has got a really rich backstory, one that's barely hinted at in the story. I will say right now that I really wish that Akira would have done was to establish more of the backstory of everything that's going on, because it really doesn't give a whole lot of explanation as to what this and this and this. Like, when they introduce Akira, the actual character of Akira, all we get is that, well, this matches Akira's own psychic levels or psionic levels. And so we're asking ourselves, okay, well, what is Akira? Who is Akira? You know, we see this name on this plaque, which the Final Fantasy fan in me was also thinking, Sephiroth! Yeah. Sorry. But no. Oh, man. Seriously, though. But yeah, there's so much story going on here. There's so many characters. And all of these characters have a part to play in the story. So you wish that you could know more about them. And yet you probably get, 5 or 10 minutes of exposition with only a handful of getting more than that, right?
Well, I mean, what I found interesting was that the... what I found interesting was Katsuhiro Otomo, was his name, right? He did the manga as well, but this was his first time doing an anime feature. And, I mean, after this, he strictly had, like, a career in anime, but the manga of Akira explores all the characters more, and he chose to condense that six volumes into 2 hours. And it's mostly a story of Kaneda and, you know, Tetsuo.
And he's not even doing that, from what I understand. From what I understand, the anime or the manga, it's telling a grand sweeping epic. I mean, this is basically just a footnote, just a small story in the larger tale that the anime was or the manga was telling. I'm going to switch out anime and manga pretty badly, so please feel free to correct me on this.
Ah, you're fine.
But it is interesting that this is his first film as a director. He would go on to do other stuff later. We'll probably talk about when we get to the Geek Sheet, because I was really impressed by the other stuff that he's done. But one thing that I found myself really interested in is that we have a whole bunch of characters. I love stories with a whole bunch of characters. And this thing has got, like, I want to say maybe 10 major characters that we're following. I mean, the major ones, not even the minor ones. We're talking about 10 major ones, including three psionics. We have two bikers. We have a military man, two scientists, a revolutionary, a victim of violence, who plays a large part. Those are just the major characters, the ones that are perpetually pushing the story across. Not to mention Akira himself, who only shows up twice in the film for 2 seconds apiece.
Well, his body parts show up more often than he does.
Yeah, the jars.
Yeah.
Yeah, his spine shows up more than he does. Or his spinal column shows up more than he does. I love stories that have that kind of sweeping, epic nature and having lots of characters that we're following, especially when you see how these characters interact with one another. And especially the interaction between what we could all say that the two major characters, the two main characters here is Tetsuo and Kaneda, right? Those are our two major characters here, right? It all comes down to these two, right?
And I believe the drinking game is drink whenever they yell each other's names at each other for more than one exchange.
By the time of the final confrontation, you'll be drunk and dead.
Yes.
Alcohol poisoning is not an option here. But Tetsuo and Kaneda, this is a very interesting aspect. And I find it interesting that a lot of Japanese anime seems to come down to this kind of childhood friendship. Childhood friends in Japanese culture seem to have this kind of very personal and very strong bond that seems to be tested in a lot of Japanese stories specifically. And here, what I find very interesting is that Tetsuo and Kaneda are not... While they're in the part of the same gang, Tetsuo kind of hates Kaneda a little bit, or is jealous of Kaneda, right?
I'd say,
I mean, the first
jealous.
Thing that when we first see him, he's basically drooling over Kaneda's sweet bike, which I can honestly totally understand. I mean, let's
who doesn't?
Here.
Yeah, I'm not even in the bikes, and I want one.
I mean, but at the same time, though, the first thing he does when he gets out of the hospital is, I gotta go steal my friend's bike. Like, who thinks like that?
Somebody that needs to get out of town real quick. And you think, what's the fastest way out of town? Oh yeah, his bike.
Yeah, but he doesn't even know how to ride it. So
he didn't think it had that flaw in it. So
it wasn't a flaw. It was intentional. It was just it's like Mad Max's security system to his gas tank.
Yeah.
But Kaneda is he's an interesting protagonist considering that he's technically not a good guy. I mean, we see him basically beat up other gang members. He's pretty much a jerk to everybody else. Very much a youth of his age.
Trying to get in the K's pants every chance he gets.
Well, I mean, he has a groupie that's basically throwing herself at him, and he's not interested in her, with the exception of maybe letting her cling on him for a few seconds here and there. And I think part of his attraction to Kay is that she doesn't immediately fawn over him.
And I think she's old. She's got to be older, too. She's either... Well, okay. My impression was the motorcycle gang is like 14, 15, 16 years old.
16. Tops. I would say 16.
Tops. And she's in college, so...
Oh, I don't see her being in college, but I think... Well, I mean, she's a revolutionary, yeah, right?
She's a student revolutionary. You know. So she may be 18 or 19 in college. So not much of a difference. But for that, for a teenager, a big age difference.
Mm-hmm. But it's very interesting here, though, that, you know, he's not your standard protagonist in a Western sense. In an Eastern sense, do you see... What do you take from Kaneda? Do you see him as a protagonist, or how strong of a protagonist do you find him? Or a hero, perhaps? Because in a way, he is going to be the hero of the story, right?
He's a reluctant hero. He did not get into this to be a hero. He got into it to save his friend and hook up with a girl, save his friend. And he just keeps getting dragged deeper and deeper into something that's like, oh shit, if I don't do something, I'm dead. Territory real quick.
Mm-hmm. What do you think, Chris?
Oh, I mean, I think Canada's a dick, you know, just like,
yeah.
I mean, he's mostly a survivor more than anything, more than a hero, more than a protagonist. I feel like he's just lucky to survive. And like the relationship between them is kind of like, I feel like it's kind of like tough love on Canada's part. I feel like they're brothers, basically. I mean, they're not like actual brothers, but they have that relationship.
They're as close as brothers as you can, considering that we, at the very end of the film, it's also interesting, the prevalent understanding of the relationship between these two characters comes at the very end, when we see that they met in a boarding house, which is also interesting because we never see them with parents,
right.
We never see them go home. They seem to live out on the street as part of this motorcycle gang. They go to school, although... I'm not sure if this is Tokyo or if this is Detroit, and part of me is wondering when the Coolio song is going to start playing at some point.
It's Neo Tokyo / RoboCop's Detroit.
I get it.
Yeah. Well, it's a dystopian megacity. I mean, you have it's not a democracy. There's some bizarre, weird high council in charge that won't even listen to the military when the military is like, guys, something really weird's going on. Oh, well, be quiet because blah, blah, blah. So.
Mm-hmm. But I'm curious about the kind of the political situation in Neo Tokyo specifically, because this actually does play a large part in events, because we have riots going on in the streets. There are people that are very upset with the government, even though... Why exactly are they upset? Are we seeing... looks pretty run down for a high-tech city, but...
I think they mentioned unemployment is horrible during one of those newscasts. They have high unemployment. We don't know what the food situation is, if enough food's getting into the city for that population.
Yeah, but we don't see food as being prominent in the story. We don't see people clamoring over food. We don't...
Nobody's throwing food during the riot. Maybe that's a Western thing, to throw rotten tomatoes at people.
Well, that's more French Revolution more than anything. You know, I don't think when we had the Iranian Revolution that they were throwing tomatoes there either. You know, just saying.
If it they did at the beginning before they started with the grenades, but yeah, for a little bit.
I don't know.
But we know there's drug trafficking of sorts.
Well, there are drugs, yeah. but they don't play a very large part in the story. I mean, this biker gang is calling themselves the Capsules.
Yeah.
Which is a very interesting biker name, especially considering that every time that I look at Kaneda's jacket, part of me wants to go play Dr. Mario.
But I was thinking, hey, is this like the dystopian version of Dragon Ball where Capsule Corp is gone evil on us? But yeah, it all links back together. Well, actually, oh, at the time, well, since a lot of the Uri manga people kind of knew each other anyway, maybe.
But no, it's just that. But yeah, this is a very interesting political situation that we have here. There is seems to be some inequality, obviously, in the education system, especially when we see that one high school for the one shot. Yeah, this is, like I said, that is like one, like part of me thinks, you know, was there ever a high school in Japan that was like that? Because I could name a
never,
few Western.
Yeah. I don't think ever in Japan, but yeah, this would make a great, I mean, that high school in a funnier sense would make a great comedy anime series, but
that's what we need. We need a spinoff of Akira called
whatever that high school's name is, you know,
Neo Tokyo High. Of course, after the end of this, that would be a very interesting story to tell about that high school. Like the ones who survived, of course.
Yeah.
Ew. All right. But,
it depends how close it was to the blast radius. It may be on the other side of town.
That's true. But, oh, I don't know. I mean, you get the sense that the entire Neo Tokyo was wiped out.
I don't think it got that big. I think it only got, quote unquote, when you deal with, like, it only maybe got a mile outside the original blast radius. Like, you know, that's still a lot of people dying.
Well, I thought another interesting thing is that when the 1988 quote unquote bomb, when Akira went off in 1988, that it basically started World War III.
Right. Which I could see at the time, if a weapon went, if something went off that nobody could explain that wipes out the Japanese capital, you would probably blame North Korea just out of spite. I mean, and that brings a lot of people into just attack and then. Time North Korea has good friends in China who'd be like, wait, they didn't do it, we didn't do it, but we got to defend them.
I would say it would be more mostly China and more than North Korea in 1988.
Yeah,
but
maybe. Well, China won't be that dumb.
If you know anything about the relationship between China and Japan,
they take responsibility and go, haha, we did it. This would be an honest, whoa, not us. Wish we could do that, but no. But yeah, was probably the war, which might explain why Canada doesn't have any like Coca-Cola stickers on his bike, because Coca-Cola was wiped out during World War III.
I think Coca-Cola was working with a rival studio, which is the reason why you didn't see Coca-Cola.
Okay.
Yeah, because they were with Columbia Pictures at the time.
Ah, okay.
Hmm.
Yeah, if you notice that little product placement in Ghostbusters. So, anyway, but it's very interesting kind of the political setup for here, because, you know, there is a government intervention. We have a conspiracy of sorts. You know, this government is harboring psionic individuals. Okay, so let's talk about the psionics right quick. The three childlike looking people. Mm-hmm. Okay, so what do we take of these Benjamin Button wannabes?
I think a lot of their physical and emotional development stopped when their powers kicked in, which was really young, which is what the height shows. Like 9 or 10 years old, their powers kick in, and emotionally they stopped.
Do you think it's emotionally? Because their body is completely. I mean, the thing is, we don't really know their age. We don't know if they just look young, or if they, you know, if their bodies just stop growing. You know, if they have some sort of dwarfism. Happening, or if this is that they're young, but their powers are draining their age from them, or some nature. We just don't know anything about their.
No,
their...
they knew Akira. Akira. They knew him when he was alive, and that was 30 years ago.
Do they though? I mean, they called him brother, but they don't ever say that we worked with Akira. That they were with.
We had the flashback scene of them in the lab where they're learning, and he blows up a monitor, and they're like, dude, cool. So they're even though they do look older than they should be, because they should only look to be maybe early 40s at tops, and their faces look older than that, even though they're unless they're just trying to say, yes, 40-year-olds are super old, and then I'm going to throw
just
a
surprised.
Rock at them. Oh, wait.
Well, I was just surprised by the fact that they used child actors to voice the. To voice these psionics, because they do have this kind of childlike maybe their facial features are old, but they also kind of have this young element to them, and I find it very interesting. And I think part of me, because and we can all agree here that there's definitely a generational element that's being played here: the young generation versus the older generation, the young rebels versus the establishment, and that the psionics kind of play both parts. They have both a young-ish element to them, but they're also of the older generation. So they're kind of in both camps, right? They aren't really part of the system harbors them, but they are their own entity, right?
They're monitoring and fearing them and also feeding them so that they don't. They take care of them and make sure they don't go insane.
But why?
Because if they ever find the proper use for them, they're the best asset ever. Because the one can semi-see the future, and the other two just have oddball powers here and there that we don't really see till towards the end.
So these are precogs, basically, like a Minority Report.
Well, they can also move things around. And, you don't just toss that out
turn
to the
into
street,
bears.
So.
Well... The government and the scientists seem to be perfectly happy basically risking another nuclear-ish explosion by even trying to harbor the powers of Akira by holding all of this stuff of Akira. You know, when they get their hands on Tetsuo and they realize that they could basically bring back Akira using Tetsuro.
The military guy kind of flipped out when he realized that he had that much power. It's the scientists that are being dumb about it. Like, no, we won't make the same mistake. Like, really, guys? Come on. Can you think about this a little bit more before you do something stupid? Like, no, we're scientists.
We don't need to be thinking about the outcomes of our things. We haven't learned our lesson
Is that something weird in Japanese culture? Because isn't that kind of Godzilla too?
Well, the scientists are the ones that aren't. I mean, the scientists are weird because they don't. They're not the ones that are really pushing for creating this, you know, super weapon from Tetsuo, but. They seem to be eager to move forward with doing something with him.
Yeah.
But the military really wants to make him a weapon. But yet the military is the ones that are like, you know, are y'all sure that you can, like, kill him if he gets out of control?
Can we kill him if we can't control him? Well, I don't know. His powers are... Okay, well...
screw it. We'll risk it. Let's roll that dice. And then when it comes up a one, they realize... Like, How?
Do I get a reroll? Oh, wait.
I got to throw some D&D in there somewhere. But no, I mean, it's just... It's... Go ahead, sorry. I'm sorry, go ahead.
Oh, I wasn't going to say anything. I was just reacting. Oh. Sorry.
Yeah. Oh, okay.
Now I get you. All right, so I guess the next thing I would like to bring up is... You know, we brought up what we thought of Kaneda. What do we think of Tetsuo specifically? Because he is a pretty unlikable guy, but we also kind of see that he does have kind of tragic, tragic backstory. Does this kind of humanize him to you, or do you find him just to be a real piece of shit? Do you, you know, Do you just wish that Dylan would just put a bullet in him?
Well, it seems easy to condemn him, but at the same time, what if him and Kaneda's positions were reversed? Would Kaneda be much different if he had those powers? Or is there something
I think
different?
It would be true. Yeah. I think that Kaneda would be more interested in... He doesn't have a power complex like Tetsuo does, but you know that he would probably be using it to try to get in girls' pants.
Yeah.
Exactly.
But would he would he be killing people like Tetsuo did?
No.
Yeah, I'm not sure if he would, or if he would just be killing people who threatened him. Because, like, that bar guy didn't do anything. He didn't deserve anything.
Tetsuo has an inferiority complex. Yes. That's something we know. We basically see it from the first one. We see him. He resents not being on top. He constantly talks about how eventually one day he's going to be the big, you know, the big guy on campus, which basically just promises you that as soon as he does that kind of have that kind of power, he's going to abuse it right away. And he does almost from the first second that he gets when he realizes he has these powers. And he wants to build those powers even stronger, which someone had brought up to me how Chronicle was inspired by Akira. And you can definitely see it. You know, there are very clear ties between the two. And specifically with Kaneda, Kaneda is confident. There's one thing that you could say about Kaneda. He is a very confident character. He's a very capable character. He doesn't let... people mess with him. He doesn't have to show his strength because he knows he has it. You know, when he's going after the clowns, he doesn't have to prove that he's stronger than they are because he basically proves. I mean, he, you know, fucking does a karate kick on the guy on his bike. You know, like it's nobody's business. You know, he's a very confident, capable individual. If he had those types of powers, yeah, he would abuse them to an extent. But he wouldn't be going out of his way to abuse them. He'd only abuse them as far as it would get him what he really wants, if that makes any sense.
Yeah, I mean, I think Kaneda would have made, like, the capsules bigger, like
a
bigger
gang. Why do you keep
calling
him Kaneda? He's not our northern neighbor.
I'm trying to say Kaneda.
It's because he has that evil twin brother named America.
Yeah.
Kaneda.
Blame Kaneda.
Kaneda.
Sorry.
I have trouble pronouncing Akira. Getting the right inflection in, you know, our title character. Akira. Yeah.
Yeah. It's
yeah. I know. With practice, I could get it. But
there you go.
And then the movie tries to be a dick and names two characters similar names, Kay and Kai, and it's like, fuck you, that's not cool. Come on.
There's a lot of Kay sounds all throughout here. I think like half the characters have a Kay somewhere in their names. You know,
It's just like, ugh.
Go watch any anime where you have two completely different characters with very similar names. It's like only one letter off. Or like, wait a minute, which guy is this again? Yeah. Who are they talking about?
Mm-hmm. I was looking up some stuff about the original Power Rangers, and there were so many Z's. You know, there were Zordon, Zed, Zords, Power Zords. I mean, it's just like all these Z names all over the place. So, yeah, for some reason, I think science fiction seems to get caught up in repetitious letter sounds. But I guess, you know, we kind of bring up the powers, the psionic powers, and the devastation that these psionic powers have, especially when we get closer to the end of the film. Now, a lot has been made by, you know, Japan has a history of talking about what happened to it in regards to the nuclear bombs that were dropped on Hiroshima and Nagasaki. Do you feel that this film is kind of talking about this? I mean, last week when we were talking about King Kong, we did bring up that Godzilla was a means of kind of exploring this aspect of, you know, of Japanese history and it being, you know, its first major monster movie. I mean, they've had monster movies before, but this was their first major one. Do you see Akira kind of taking some of its inspiration from what happened to it?
Yes. I mean, the Japan's the only nation that's actually been assaulted with nuclear weapons, and his psychic blast at the beginning there is well, it gets confused for a nuclear blast. So it's as devastating, if not more so. And that just kind of plays in the... I mean, it's something they understand better than we ever could. And for the guys who dropped in. But, yeah. I mean, people are saying, well, we're America. We've been hit with stuff before. It's like, yeah, but not like that.
What do you think, Chris?
I mean, I definitely see, like, similarities between something like Godzilla and Akira, because I mean, I kind of see Tetsuo as more of like a force of nature, basically.
I get what you're saying, man. Here's something interesting in history that I found very fascinating, because World War II, not just what happened to Hiroshima and Nagasaki, but the bombing raids that were done on Japan. Had caused massive fires that had basically burnt the entire country to the ground because most of its architecture was based in wood. So in order to hurt the country, you know, they would firebomb. They would just send the entire place up in flames. And a lot of Japanese animation has talked about these firebombs, especially if you've ever seen an anime called Grave of the Fireflies. Which is extremely. I will never watch that movie again. It's that painful to watch. But
not in a bad way, in a depressing way. That's from.
It's a great movie, but it will hurt. It'll
destroy you emotionally, basically. Yeah. So yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. But one thing I found very interesting is that after World War II, Japan had to basically rebuild itself, and it rebuilt itself in concrete and steel, and it created these extremely massive high rises and built ultra modern cities in the wake of World War II. And I find it very interesting that, especially when you look at Tokyo before the blast, and you see Neo Tokyo rebuilt as this futuristic city. Part of me felt that does kind of is talking about Japan's evolution post World War II, which again brings up the whole the whole nuclear weapon aspect of the psionic powers, and the fact that in a way that this is a That whenever Japan's art talks about modernization, it always talks about it as something perilous, something that can either be a great benefit to you, but could also destroy you completely. And that, in a way, Akira admires technology, but it also says here that technology will be your doom, in that especially if you do not respect nature, you are going to unleash doom upon yourself. Because what happens, but the fact that they again try to play God, they create another like Akira, and in a way it takes Akira destroying everything in order to get rid of this threat. So again, they unleash the very thing that they were hoping not to by unwielding this particular technology, right? Or do you get a different interpretation about the events leading at the end of the film?
Yeah, that might be reading too much into it. We want cool plot. Let's go. But
So you don't think that there's anything more prominent being said here?
I mean, there's a reason they buried the parts for Akira. They just don't.
What's that?
They didn't want it happening again. So yeah,
well,
they don't.
He's dead. But then why not destroy the parts? They kept it so that they could study it,
right?
So that they can they can do something with it. So that they can build something from it. They, you know, this is basically like John Hammond unleashing dinosaurs and then going, oh, well, that sucked. Well, let's try this all over again.
Which he does.
I mean, no, Hammond doesn't.
Well, yeah.
No,
still, no, okay.
People take Hammond stuff and then do something with it. But... into a Jurassic Park conversation. Yeah, okay.
Well, it's tampering with things that should not be tampered with. And then, because humans can inherently be pack rats, we just don't throw it away. We store it somewhere and go. And then later on, somebody goes, huh, I wonder what this is.
Well, here's an interesting aspect that I find very fascinating, is the fact that this movie is set 1 year before Tokyo is going to have the Olympic Games.
And they are going to have it in 2020.
Hold on. Okay. What's interesting is that Tokyo had the Olympic Games in 1962, maybe it was the winter 1963, okay. I think, maybe. But the thing was is that this was an important Olympic Games for Japan because this was coming off of the massive reconstruction of Japan after World War II. And they were wanting to show off the modernization. The world had honored Japan by setting the games in Tokyo specifically for this particular reason. And what I find very interesting here is that yet again, just about, you know, a little bit less than 30 years after the events of this massive catastrophe, they yet again set the Olympic Games in Tokyo, and that the massive conspiracy, the hidden elements of this psionic warfare department is underneath the construction for the Olympics. So part of me thinks that is intentional, that this is something that is being said about how Japan's standing in the world seems to be harbored on the technological advances of Japan and Tokyo and their ability to create create this kind of a society. Yet at the same time, it's the very same society that had been destructive towards it and that can destroy them at a moment's notice. Which also, if you play into the fact that Japan had notoriously kind of isolated itself from technological advances for nearly 100 years, which set itself back, culturally, to the point where they were playing catch up in the 19th century, also should be also taken into effect. So, you know, if you don't have this technological advance, you're left in the dirt and you are basically fucked, or you become technologically advanced and be the harbinger of your own destruction and again be fucked. So
and this may be way out in left field, but the Olympics themselves are a way to showcase a nation's best athletes, the best kind of the best physically fit and capable of doing a specific thing. And then underneath Olympic Stadium is the next stage in human evolution.
Well, is it human evolution? I mean, is this something that they're wanting to pass on to regular human beings, or
I think if they could control it and make sure people don't go wacko and nuke things, they would. They would want to get a stable breeding scenario going, which the kids can't do, because that goes to my theory that a lot of them locked up at an early age, so they couldn't produce heirs. And Akira went nuclear. Tetsuo is... Well, we'll talk about the ending here in a second.
Yeah, there we go.
But yeah, I think that's an eventual goal. I mean, they're talking about humanity. They're comparing humanity to an amoeba, and then the next phase is the incredibly powerful psychics. So.
What are you taking from all this, Chris?
I don't know. I hadn't seen Akira since I was like a teenager before this, and like, I pretty much feel the same way about it. Like, I love the visuals. I love certain aspects of it. But I feel like the film's trying to say too much in such a little amount of time. Like, it tries to touch on, like, evolution and man creating God and, you know, all this shit. It never really, and then it ends with like a giant, you know, techno baby, and you're like, what the fuck? I don't, what?
Yeah,
it's just I don't know. I like it, but at the same time, it's like
heavy stuff. It's
like I can't recommend it.
Yeah, especially when you're basically just seeing this guy turn into a huge testicle.
Yeah, yeah.
All right, so let's go ahead and let's talk about the ending here, because Tetsuo gets too big for his britches, literally.
It's kind of a jump the shark, but
well, yes and no. The thing is, though, is that one of the things that we see here is control. Control seems to be an underlying element that's throughout the film. The government's trying to control the people. The people fight back. The secret organizations try to control the psionics. The psionics fight back. Our main protagonists here are street biker, you know, bike gang. So, you know, obviously they're outlaws. They're rebels. Right, they're out for themselves, and they will fight back. So why not have it so that Tetsuo's own body fights back against him from his own control? And so the only way that they can deal with it at this particular point is that they have to get him off of this planet. But
and he becomes the amoeba that just absorbs.
Yes, course, we have that very,
I kind of wanted to make a in Soviet Russia joke during that, because in Soviet Russia, she gets into him instead of he gets,
Kiori, I'm going to tell you right now, if there's one person that you absolutely have to feel sorry for,
it's her.
It's Kiori. Yeah. She didn't deserve... basically the worst thing that she did was that she fell in love with a punk, and not only did he basically treat her like garbage, but then he absorbed her.
Yeah,
she didn't do anything bad, but she didn't do anything period before she got squished by his giant baby testicle thing. So that's how I felt anyway. So
the thing is that, I mean, honestly, she deserved better. She that's the thing. Like, I'm of two minds when it comes to Kiori, because Kiori is basically your battered girlfriend, right? She doesn't have to be around this guy, but at the same time, she feels loyal, and in a way, you know, he does give her some attention, but at the same time, though, he's too self-absorbed. And two, you know, he just only thinks about himself. And yet at the same time, though, she's trying her hardest to kind of help bring him down. And in a way, you know, we have the girlfriend trope, you know, when, you know, the guy is going off his rocker, you know, the girl comes in and, you know, brings him down, right? That's kind of what we expect with this type of story. So, you know, here she doesn't. And on top of that, she basically gets absorbed by him in a very way. The visual of her being absorbed is just as bad as anything. And to think that there might be some individuals that are using that image for their own personal stuff.
You had to bring that up, man. Come on. Yeah.
Hey, it's Japanese animation. This isn't even the worst that I've seen from Japan when it comes to this. I mean, this is the country that has introduced us to tentacle porn. Okay,
just saying. Among other things.
It's just interesting here that. So they have to use Akira. They have to basically destroy the city in order to save the city in a way, right? To get Tetsuro his own. Okay, what exactly did happen to him? Because I understand what I'm told happened to him, but so basically he threatens to destroy humanity, and they give him his own universe.
That's, yeah, doesn't he get an alternate universe to, rather... like, to his own Big Bang Theory or whatever? Isn't it some shit like that?
I am God here!
He he's God of becomes God of his own universe, and we shuff him off to another universe and never deal with him again.
It's like, what the fuck? I mean, you basically are just, it's like, you just gave, you know, the crybaby the candy that he wanted. It's like, and on top of that, he's like, I am Tetsuro. Like, no, you don't get to be the nice guy after that. You don't get to be the god after that. I hope that you're never the god of a planet that I'm on. I'll say that much.
It's just going to be a planet full of giant weird babies, so it's fine.
Yeah. Although that would definitely it's make fine. A lot of sense. Oh boy. Oh, we're all going to hell. All right. Akira, it just with the way that Akira kind of is a deus ex machina in a way. I don't know. I don't know exactly what to make of Akira as a character here, because they make such a big deal out of the fact that, you know, he's this all powerful being that they want someone like him, and yet, you know, he's referred to and he's referred to, and yet when he does show up, basically he just blows things up. You know, it's, you know, that's a deus ex machina, isn't it?
Oh yeah, he's just the MacGuffin showing up and fixing a problem and not really even fixing it much, but.
Well, that's not what a MacGuffin is.
Well, yeah. Okay. I didn't want to use Deus Ex Machina after I used it. The god of from the machine. Right. Actually, he is a god from the machine. He's the god from the freezer.
He is a god in the machine. Yes. That's the truest form that could be said here. I don't know. I mean, from that particular point. All right, so why did the kid save the military guy? Considering that he's as big a dick as everybody else. Did he deserve to get saved? I mean, he didn't really show the kids any kindness.
He didn't show the kids kindness. From my take on it, though, is one, they're just trying to save whoever they can reach out and grab.
Well, then go grab some kids in high school.
Well, because he's right in front of them, and they're over there, so... But as a character, he's a dick, but he's a dick that doesn't want to see the world destroyed. I kind of get the impression that if he knew he would die but be able to stop the end of the world, he would do it.
But he would do it by unleashing Akira. I mean, this is a military guy of the fullest resort. I mean, this is a guy that basically did martial law on Tokyo.
Well,
politicians
would have let Tokyo just vaporize. They didn't give a crap. Or they didn't recognize any of what was going on.
I mean, yeah, he's doing the thing the darn politician ain't gonna do, you know what I mean? It's like, I don't know. This is why I wish that I would have more backstory if we had more interactions between certain characters, because there's so many characters here, and 2 hours is a great amount of time to get a story done, but especially when motivations matter so much to the finale. And this has always been my biggest problem with Akira, is the ending doesn't make much sense. You can throw in all the little inferences and references to to real life events or metaphors or stuff like that, but it really doesn't make sense. And part of it, I wonder, is a loss in translation type thing, where, you know, that this is something cultural in Japan that makes more sense to the Japanese. But I've gone through and I've looked at every piece of research that I can find on what the ending of Akira means, and it's all over the place. Different people take different things from it. And yet, in order to get those different things, they had to completely ignore or to kind of dismiss other aspects of the story that don't fit the narrative. And it's contradictory at points, which is something that I find very fascinating about Akira, that there's a lot of interesting stuff here, but the ending doesn't make sense at all. Like, all of a sudden we have a Death Star show up out of nowhere.
Well, you know,
where the fuck was this Death Star from?
I told you it's Reagan's 80s, and that's the Star Wars Defense Initiative right there.
No, Star Wars is anti-missile defense. This is Death Star.
That's the next phase. After you get the anti-missile going, then you go for the able-to-shoot tanks on the ground. So, it makes sense.
And how is it that you have this massive laser that basically just pounds anything that's underneath it, and all it does is cut off a guy's arm? That is, like, really specific. Did they have a setting on the lasers? Like, okay, let's just cut his arm off.
I think he was throwing up some shield and just didn't get his arm covered.
No, the way his arm was set up, it was kind of random. It was just like a ninja, you know, fruit ninja slice or something.
Well, maybe he's holding his arms out going, look at me, I'm powerful. Oh, that is bad. And, like,
well, he did give himself a lord's cape.
Yeah.
You know, like the red Darth Vader or something. So, and he is more machine now than human, twisted evil. And evil. Sorry, I had to do that. Oh, boy.
What else was there? about that. The whole B-1.
Yeah.
What, have you ever... Okay, this is going to tangent a little hard here, but have you ever seen the Robot Chicken Christmas?
Oh, which one?
The one where they do the Dragon Ball Z versus Santa fight.
Oh,
Goku versus Santa. The ending of that basically does take on...
It's Akira.
It's Akira, because it's like the one transforms into a light and comes into his hand, and they go, the Nishaka, or whatever, is complete. And somebody goes, what the beep just happened? It's like, yeah, that's Akira. So...
I remember that episode all too well, especially the little drummer boy who
can summon demons,
who does kind of like Kamiyama with his drums,
yeah,
which I thought was hilarious. All right, so can either one of you explain this ending to me? Am I missing something here? Does this make any more sense to you? I don't think it is, but I will go ahead and at least give you a chance to respond.
It's probably in the manga. So,
actually, believe it or not, this is the halfway point in the manga. Believe it or not, the rest of the story, basically the rest of it is a fight between Akira and his regent. Which is in fact Tetsuo. Tetsuo doesn't get his own universe. He becomes Darth Vader to Akira's emperor, with Kai being the Luke Skywalker to that old lady that you saw that was leading the religion against for Akira. Akira's religion. Priest, that's actually the anti-Akira, the one that's fighting Akira after the apocalypse. So, yeah, and Ki is her emissary, and Kaneda is basically trying to protect the Luke Skywalker. So I guess you could say he's the Han Solo of this whole shindig, to an extent, or maybe Obi-Wan Kenobi, maybe? I don't know. I'm starting to get this all mixed up in my head, too. So, I guess the last question I'll bring up is, because there's been about 12 different tries at doing a live-action remake, and, this month we do have another anime getting a live-action remake. So, question, would you be interested in seeing Akira as a live-action remake?
No.
I get that that's a general consensus here.
You know, it depends who's starring in it. Let's not whitewash this movie. It's taking place. If you keep it set in Tokyo, use Japanese actors. So, I mean, at one time, weren't they thinking like Keanu Reeves and base it in L.A.? And it's like, no, no.
No.
Yeah.
I will say that I would agree with you with one exception. If they decide that they're going to do the not the movie Akira, but they decide that they're going to move towards the saga.
Yeah.
If they do that, and if they show that they're different than this film, then I will be more interested.
Yeah.
And because especially now that I know kind of the general way that the manga goes, I think that that would be a great story to tell. And I think that there's more that they could do with that. As for whitewashing, I don't want it to be whitewashed completely, but I will be a little bit more open as to who they would cast for these parts.
If they'd write it that, you know, a lot of immigrants came to Neo-Tokyo to get away from World War III, because somehow Neo-Tokyo survives World War III. It's the cause of it, but it pretty much survived. If they say, oh, all these guys were refugees that came here, and then you could really mix it up. You don't have to be whitewashed, but you could throw every ethnicity in there if you wanted to, and just throw away lines here and there. It's like, oh, well, they came from Canada after, you know, it burned. So, during World War III, like, okay.
I get you. But, no, I'll be a little bit more open when it comes to casting. Just as long as it's a really good cast, right. If they get the main leads right.
And age appropriate.
Yes. Yes. Well, I mean, let's say I'll go 18 to 20 for that. It's not too much. On top of that, we're going to have violence and sex in it.
That's
so
true. Okay. We don't want the Stranger Things kids in this gory of a movie.
No, Millie Bobby Brown for this.
Yeah.
All right. So, gentlemen, let's go ahead and let's do a quick geek sheet. I only have one major thing, but before I take it, do y'all have any that y'all want to bring up?
Well, I noticed during one of the remakes, Matt Mercer from Critical Role was one of the voice actors.
Nice.
That's one of the things I saw scrolling through. I mean, there's been a number of redubs of this, or English dub. I mean, there's an initial, and then there's a 2001, and yeah, there's been a number of them that, I'm sure if you looked, you'd be like, oh, they were in this, too, and they were in this. Because voice actors aren't everything.
Alright, what about you, Chris? Do you have any?
I was going to say Otomo actually also did Steam Boy, which I kind of feel the same way about that one that I do about this. Like, it's visually great, but the story is lacking.
I agree.
Yeah, so.
The one that I'll bring up with Otomo that have either of you seen Memories by any chance?
No, I've always wanted to.
Why does that sound familiar?
It's kind of an anthology. There's, I think, three small stories in this one. And the first one is the most memorable because it's kind of this ghost ship, kind of gothic horror kind of thing. Otomo did the third segment, which was called Cannon Fodder. And that one is a weird one. I think it's the shortest of the three, if I'm not correct. But it's just this weird short that he did for this segment. And if you ever get a chance, check it out. It's a very interesting anthology, if I may say so. All right, so gentlemen, are we ready to call it?
I think so.
Yeah, I guess so. I got nothing else. I was gonna say something wacky and clever and like brain fried.
My head hurts too much to. Yeah. This movie made my head hurt, and that could be both a good thing and a bad thing. Like with it, like this usually happens when I watch a David Lynch film. So you know, both the good and the bad.
Oh, David Lynch is Akira.
Okay, I'll tell you right now. Even if he does a shot for shot remake, I would watch David Lynch's Akira. Yeah. I'll do it right now. I'll just say it right now. If he does Akira, I am so in. just saying. All right. Kent, Chris, do you agree with the critics on Akira? Do you give it a pass? Do you give it a fail? Or do you give it a maybe? Kent?
This is kind of tough here. Because, yeah, the ending was weird. There were some plot oddities. I so want to give it a pass, but at the same time, there's better sci-fi anime out there. There's better... Just you know, sci-fi anime that doesn't involve giant robots or spaceships anime. It didn't grab me like I think it should have, even though parts of it did. So I'm like somewhere between the maybe and a pass, but I think I'm gonna commit a sin against otaku kind and say I'm gonna maybe it. And I'm just not finding the love I think I should have for this.
Alright.
Chris.
I mean, I feel similarly that Kent does. Like, I'm pretty much in the middle between maybe and pass, and it's just like, the story is basically about a guy acting like a giant baby, becoming a giant baby, and getting his own fucking way. So it's like, eh. It's just very, I mean, I love the visuals. The visuals are great. That's about it. So, I'm gonna go with maybe as well.
I get you. So for me, I'll just say this right now. I love the visual style of this film. I love the animation. I love the kinetic nature, especially the action sequences are really memorable. There's a lot of great stuff here, but the story is bonkers. And in most cases, I'm willing to go with that. especially if it's having a lot of fun. The problem here is that a lot of the stuff, they don't really set up very well. It's almost like an inside joke at times. And while part of me really wants to compare this to Blade Runner, the story itself reminds me a lot of Donnie Darko. And I don't know if you remember, Kent, about my impressions of Donnie Darko, but it's just, in most cases, it really doesn't work because it's bouncing back and forth between, does it want to be a metaphor? Does it want to be just a hardcore science fiction movie? Does it want to, you know, is it really, where is it trying to go with all this? And I think that it's just telling a story that's way too big for the time frame that it was trying to say. And in the way that they set up the characters, I love the fact that there's so many characters, but they don't really give all the characters the amount of attention that they deserve and to be able to tell their stories in a way that allows us to truly understand what all the motivations. Like I said, I mean, we don't even get the key understanding of the relationship between our two main characters until the end of the film, when we've already gone through this entire ride with them. We need to have that beforehand so that we understand why it is that Kaneda is willing to sacrifice the entire city because he won't kill his best friend. We don't really understand these things until it's already passed. So there's a lot here that I really like, but I really think that the film isn't, I don't think that the critics have been critical to the things that don't work with the film. And so I'm going to go ahead and I'm going to agree with you on maybe. This is a maybe, I'm okay. I mean, this is a movie that, like I said, every time that I see it, it's not because I want to see it. It's mostly just because, oh, it's there. Okay, yeah. I'll check it out. And who knows, maybe my opinion will change. I've said that 5 times and my opinion has never changed any of those 5 times.
But you're willing to have it on in the background, even though your opinion never changes.
Well, I mean, it's an interesting movie. I mean, it is interesting. I'm not, when I say a maybe, even if I fail a movie, it's not because I don't like it, although in most cases that's the case. But, you know, I can enjoy a movie and still say that the critics are wrong.
It's a very pretty thing to be working on something, look up, and there's something pretty on the screen, and go, yeah, and go back to what you were doing.
And I'm not saying that the critics are wrong here. I just don't think that they've given this the shakethrough that it deserves. That this film hasn't been criticized for what it does wrong. And there's enough here that's been done wrong that hasn't been addressed. So that's the reason I'm maybeing this one. But, gentlemen, I think that we can go ahead and head on out of Neo-Tokyo, especially in the shattered ruins of its remains. And then we're going to a place that's much darker.
Yes.
Indiana.
Horrible place. I mean.
just
1 out of 10 deeper. I would not recommend. Oh, wait a minute. We got rid of our governor.
No, you just passed him on to the rest of us. Thank you very much.
You're welcome.
All right, but it is that time again this year where it's time for lots of basketball and lots of cheering fans, and why not do a little talking about the round thingy that goes into the other round thingy?
Yeah, hoops.
So
actual sports called ball that uses a round ball as opposed to hand egg. This is not hand egg. This is basketball. You bounce the ball, you throw it, it goes into the hoop.
So we are getting into that other 80s classic of the period with Gene Hackman and Dennis Hopper and I believe Barbara Hershey, if I'm not correct. I could be wrong on that one. But what's that movie again, Kent?
Hoosiers.
Yes. So I hope that you'll join us for that episode. I know that I'm really excited about coming into this one because I have some opinions. Whether those opinions are good or bad, we will discuss that next time. But before we get there, if you feel like you want to say something about our opinions, if you're a hardcore otaku and think that we should commit seppuku, please feel free to let us know either on our Facebook page or you can hit us on Twitter at Arthouse Legends. Or if you want to send that privately, you can always email us at arthouselegends@gmail.com. We thank you for all of those wonderful comments and things that you have to say. So, gentlemen, any last words?
Kanida!
Wow.
Great.
Nah, I think I'm good. I think that's it.
I was hoping that you're gonna respond. That's cool. Right, you can be your own independent snowflake. That's fine. All right, this is the Movie Dude Eric.
And this is Kat.
And this is Chris.
And Phoenix.